Next case is A21-0903, Idlewood Homeowners Association versus Town of Ideal. It's my understanding, based on discussions, counsel, Mr. Woody will be having 10 minutes of his argument from the appellant's time, and then Mr. Van Korf will take 5 minutes of that. And then a respondent will have 15 minutes, and then I assume, Mr. Woody, you'll have the entire 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Then, now that we've done the time, as all parties are aware, this matter is a Zoom argument. We are recording this. However, for benefit of the parties and counsel, there are no private recordings allowed. The audio recording of this argument will be available tomorrow, I believe. So with that,
hey Judge Conley,
yes.
I just want to make sure I have this correct. So the appellants will have 10, one will have 10 minutes, one will have five.
Yep.
And then the respondent will have 15.
Yep. And then the appellant will have, Mr. Woody will have 5 minutes finally on rebuttal. That's the way I understand it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you, Marshall. So with that, then, Mr. Woody, whenever you're ready, if you can just begin and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the panel, counsel. My name is Scott Woody. I work at the Hamfreedy Law Firm, and I'm representing the Town of Ideal in this matter. Before I jump into addressing the substantive issues involved in this case, Your Honor, I would like to say a few words about Cartway proceedings generally. Given the thorough briefing in the case, you're all aware of that cartways are a mechanism of access for landlocked parcels. One point I want to make, though, is that the cartway process really only begins after neighboring property owners are unable to reach an agreement on a negotiated private easement. Sometimes they disagree on cost, sometimes they disagree on route or size of that easement, but it is nearly almost always a better outcome for both sides if the parties reach a private easement. Obviously, that did not happen here. The second general point I would like to make is that under the cartway statute, towns are mandated to grant a cartway to provide access to a landlocked parcel if the parcel meets the criteria expressly set out in the statute. Towns do not create cartways when they want to and cannot deny cartways when they want to as well. If the parcel is landlocked and 5 acres, a cartway will be established by order and direction of the legislature. Third general point, cartways are public rights of way and thus part of the what I'll call the general town road system, even though they're not generally constructed or maintained by the town itself. As such, it is reasonable and appropriate for towns to consider safety, accessibility, to ordinary vehicles, accessibility to emergency vehicles, and delivery trucks, so on and so forth. These are town roads. Fourth, the determination of the route of a carway is a legislative decision. The town board, as any other body making the legislative decision, takes into consideration relevant information that is gathered through the process available, and might hear viewpoints from various sides, advocates, interested parties, perhaps even expert evidence from those that have that knowledge. The town board in these proceedings—
Mr. Woody, at one of the arguments that Mr. Van Cleve's client was making is that the easement that it granted for egress and ingress was sufficient and did provide meaningful access under the statute. Would you please briefly explain to me why he is wrong?
Sure, Your Honor. Meaningful access is the concept that has been given to us over the line of cases. You've seen the case citations by both parties. We're all talking about the same principle, and that is whether the route that is at issue, it could be an alternative route, it could be in this case, it's an easement route, whether it provides practicable, meaningful, reasonable, effective access. Those are the terms that you'll generally see in the Rose and the Kennedy case. Here, what we have is a route that has a tremendously steep access point or a steep part of the terrain, and also low-lying, wet, swampy land. We know that by virtue of a number of pieces of the record. And I'm going to talk about the record here and what the town board members have done and what they had available to them, because that's an integral part of how we look at meaningful access at the appellate level.
Mr. Woody, I have a question about the record, and I'm looking at the over the aerial view of the property right now, and people talked about moving a garage or the possibility of moving a garage. And is that the garage that appears to be south of the co-op off of Highway or County Road 39?
Your Honor, it is. I'm not having my, I thought I had a map up here, but it is a neighboring property owner who does affront the County Road 39. And there is a 31 foot easement that had been granted. I can't remember the year, but it was long, long ago. And it runs on this, I believe, the south border of that private, privately owned piece of property. And the garage is within that easement.
And so is that the property that's to the north or the south of the old Milwaukee?
South.
Okay, so that's the co-op.
I believe it's the co-op, or if there's, is there, I'm trying to think back, there may be one additional residential looking property there. So if you look at the, I believe it is the old Milwaukee Club has the red roof. Okay, we'll call that the old Milwaukee Club for the red roof building. Then there's a parcel south of that. I believe that is the co-op. Mm-hmm. And then there's a what I believe is a residential property south of that, ending in parcel 742. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that the easement runs along the south border boundary of that property there.
Thank you. And then, and to Judge Conley's point, I'm not sure that there are any cases, and this is for all of the attorneys in this case, that are right on point on this case. And so my question to you is, should we make this precedential? And if so, what would the syllabus point be?
Your Honor, I do believe that the guidance provided by Kennedy and Rose here likely does not make this a precedential case. And the reason is what we have is a steep hill, a mucky, low-lying area that the town board members went out to view. They obtained, I believe, appropriately, a town engineering, the town engineer's report to assess what we have in front of us as town board members to determine whether we have meaningful access or not. They followed the concepts or the principles laid out in Kennedy and Rose and determined, based on the information that they had before them, their experience walking the route, their experience visiting the route, and the information gathered from neighbors and the interested parties, and determined that that was too steep, not good enough, not practicable access. And given the cost of the construction, that information they received from the town engineers, in their estimation, and with all the information they had, that was not meaningful access as that term has been provided to us.
But why doesn't Romer or Raymer, or however you pronounce that, the other case, why doesn't that apply then?
Romer stands for the question of whether if an easement is available or provides a legal access right. We're the town board looked at this easement, Your Honor, and said, let's just assume it is valid and that it does give legal access to the property. Is that the town board had to then decide whether that access was meaningful access, which then takes us to the step under Kennedy. Are we looking at an access that is up a bluff or under the shocked case? Is it rocky, steep hill that for which the cost of constructing a drive over it would be prohibitive? That's the line of cases, the assessment that the town board went to. And frankly, like I said, why I don't believe this is a precedential determination. This is just an application of existing authorities, and the town board has to make a challenging decision kind of one of the general points I was going to make is these types of decisions aren't the types of decisions town board members look forward to, Your Honor. They're going to have to make a challenging decision that's going to leave some or not, if possibly all people in the room, unhappy. And it's not a decision that has great bearing, benefit, or cost for that matter, to the town. They're forced to do this under the legislature's directive. And they have to make a decision of how steep is too steep? How costly is prohibitively costly? Given the effects and the route that we have before us, what is meaningful access, or how are we going to determine that? We have the guidelines that the Supreme Court has offered to us. The town board took all measures that it could to gather the information that it believed would be relevant, and they did here in this case. They made the tough determination, and the appellate courts in Minnesota have long established that those decisions of a legislative body in using their discretion and their policy judgment shouldn't be interfered with by the judges, the courts, unless there is an erroneous point of law, unless there is arbitrary and capricious conduct or proceedings. Here, Your Honor, those didn't exist. We have the record. We see what the basis for the town board's determination was. It was well articulated, and I would argue a very well prepared resolution by the town board and signed there. The determination of the town board should stand, is the position of the town, Your Honor. I'll allow Mr. Van Korf to make sure that he gets valuable use of his 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. You may begin whenever you're ready, sir.
May it please the court. I'm Gerald Van Korf, Ranking Noonan in St. Cloud for Mr. Feltman and his corporation, Ideal 5.9 LLC. Mr. Feltman petitioned and appeared before the township without counsel. When the petition was submitted, the Idlewild's counsel wrote to the township and to Mr. Feltman and admitted that the parcel was landlocked, and told the council, the township, that their one issue was whether there was an alternative that was less disruptive and damaging and in the public interest. And our position is that that statement to the township was the correct standard and the and furnished an admission that this parcel is landlocked. When Mr. Feltman appeared at the township hearing, it was announced that an easement had been recorded unilaterally without his knowledge, without negotiation. And the main point I want to make in the few minutes I have left is that that unilateral recording without Mr. Feltman's consent or acceptance, that didn't convert the access to land not over the access over the not over the land of others. And that's really the distinction between the Romer and the cases that involve parties who have already negotiated an easement. An easement is a two-sided real estate transaction. And in that real estate transaction, they resolve the benefits and the burdens and what kind of access is going to happen. And the grantee agrees that the access is acceptable. In this case, the access was not defined. It was foisted on him as a ambiguous easement of access and ingress and egress, and the law just doesn't anticipate. The statute wasn't written that you would have access over the land of others simply because somebody recorded an easement that you didn't want.
So Mr. Van Korf, I appreciate the fact that you have limited time. I'd like to hear your response to Judge Riley's question about whether this should be precedential. And I'm wondering whether perhaps you just articulated your syllabus point.
The judge's decision in the district court would be precedential. It would radically change the administration. I don't know that. I don't know that. To me, the precedential decision would be that if you record an easement without the consent of the grantee, that creates land access not over the land of others. And I think that's totally inconsistent. You know, the way a deed is an agreement. It's drafted according to the agreement. It is handed to the grantee, and now the grantee has it, and the grantee records it because the recording is the one act that unequivocally shows that it's been accepted. What's really going on here is that the district court basically said the discretion of the township can be removed to pick the best route simply by recording an easement and saying it's land, it's access, it's not over the land of others. I don't know if that answers your question, but I do agree. I think a reversal would not be precedential, and affirmance would.
Thank you, Mr. Van Korf. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please. Ideal Homeowners Association. You're muted, Mr. Van Cleve.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can you hear me? Apologies. May it please the court, Gary Van Cleve on behalf of Idlewood Homeowners Association. Going directly to the question asked by Judge Riley, this is not a precedential case. This is the Romer case. And I think it's important to look at the facts of the Romer case, where there was an existing easement and the Cartway petitioner was seeking to have a cartway established because he didn't like the easement. He didn't like the route that the easement provided. And the district court actually agreed with the cartway petitioner. In the Romer decision, the Supreme Court described what the district court found. And the Supreme Court said that the district court found that the easement granted plaintiff did not give plaintiff access to his land in any manner except over the land of others, and that the easement required plaintiff to travel on the lane or trail over the fields and through a swampy area. Notwithstanding those difficulties with respect to that easement, the Supreme Court said that we have concluded that the statute does not contemplate establishing an alternative right-of-way where an owner already has means of ingress and egress. And that is precisely what we have here. This cartway petitioner—
But of course, in the Romer case, that easement had been longstanding and used by the parties. As I read the facts of the case, I think they're really different from the facts in this case. Do you disagree with me?
Pardon me, do I agree with you? I do not agree with you, and I would like to tell you why. In fact, the easement that was granted here gives access from Valhalla Road to the Ideal 5.9 property, which is a distance of about 55 feet. And it was a 33, is essentially a two rod wide, 55 foot long access that connects to an established trail. And as the record showed, that trail probably has existed for 40 years, but it was upgraded by this Cartway petitioner within the last several years. And it is used mainly by snowmobiles and ATVs, which does not mean that it cannot be used by a car, which does not mean that it cannot be improved to provide a driveway for this property owner. And so therefore, it is not a case where this is a, in fact, the question in my mind is, I'm wondering how all those people who were using that trail to go to the bar that's owned by this Cartway petitioner on the abutting property, how they were getting from Valhalla Road to that trail, presumably over this area that was quitclaim deeded as an easement by Idlewood to Ideal 5.9. Mr. Witte made some interesting points about the nature of a cartway, and I would also like to make an interesting point about the nature of a cartway, and that is, it is essentially it's a condemnation statute. It's a taking statute. And as we know, and as Judge Paul Anderson said in the Anda case, that is an awesome power. And what's good about the cartway statute is that it requires consideration of the public interest. It requires that you look at whether or not there is a less damaging route to the affected property owner. And that is precisely what we're dealing with here.
But that leads me to my next point, which is that who is the body that makes that determination? Is it the township board who grants the cartway right or not? Or is it a district court sitting in review? And what do you think a district court's role is in these decisions?
I think the district court in this case assumed the exact right role, because the district court concluded as a threshold issue that this is not a proper case for a cartway petition because this cartway petitioner had access via that easement. Now, it's interesting that I'm hearing arguments in the Court of Appeals, and I was not counsel below on this case, but I don't understand that there was a lot of discussion or argument about the validity of this easement. And certainly the district court judge said that Ideal 5.9 had every right to use that easement, which was granted without any conditions and is an easement in perpetuity on this property. Where the district court said the town board erred, and I agree, was in solely considering the comparative cost in granting access through a residential cul-de-sac, through a residential neighborhood that was established 20 years ago as a conservation community, essentially, that is latticed with trails and the desired cartway route by Mr. Feltman actually crosses one of those trails and takes a dead end street that had been in existence for 20 years and would turn it into a thoroughfare. And the district court judge made the interesting point that he's wondering whether the bar patrons would find that access convenient for them as well. And we have to keep in mind that parcel that was landlocked until the easement was granted is a commercially zoned parcel next to a single family residential neighborhood, a common interest community. And so—
But the record is that Mr. Feltman wants to build housing, duplexes, as I understand it, not to put up a commercial building.
That's what he's telling people. He has no obligation to use his property in that way. And the concern is because it is commercially zoned, he can put it to any commercial use that he desires. And so it would, I believe, be a public policy abrogation in this case to say that this commercial property can gain access through a residential neighborhood. I think that what we have here is a pretty easy case for this court. You don't get to the cartway considerations at all. You don't get to what a route is the more or less damaging. You don't get to what the public interest is here because this Cartway petitioner fails right out of the gate. He has access, and that's what the Romer case held. And I would submit that it doesn't make any difference if that easement had been granted, as it was in Romer, by a brother-in-law to Mr. Romer, or if the easement was granted by an adjoining property owner who is trying to avoid exceptionally damaging Cartway route. Now, we don't know the history of why there was not an ability to agree on this, but clearly we had an immovable force and an irresistible object. Mr. Feltman wanted a quick and easy Cartway route punched out of a cul-de-sac in a residential neighborhood. He didn't want to have to deal with something that would go the length of his own property. And that was one of the other things that was erroneous about the way the town board looked at this. They were looking at what it was going to cost Mr. Feltman to upgrade the driveway on his own property and comparing that to the cost of building a 50-foot Cartway over the Idlewood property. The apples to apples would have been, how much was it going to cost to connect the 55-foot easement to Mr. Feltman's property versus the desired Cartway path off the cul-de-sac? But again, I believe the district court was wise in recognizing that the town board had only one concern, and that was which was cheapest and best for this Cartway petitioner. And that is not what the statute provides or requires. There's nothing in the statute that says that you have to consider what the cost would be. Now, I will grant you that there may be a threshold where it's cost prohibitive to such an extreme that perhaps that should be taken into account. But the statute in and of itself says what you've got to look at, if it is a proper Cartway petition, which this is not, you have to look at what is less damaging to the affected property owner and what is in the public interest. And I think when you consider that the zoning of these properties is a public policy, public interest issue, and respecting that zoning by not allowing commercial traffic in whatever form, let's say he puts four duplexes on there, that's eight families. You're talking about, 30 or 40 trips a day coming in and out of a quiet single family residential neighborhood if Mr. Feltman has his way. That is a consideration and clearly something the district court judge took into account. The Cartway statute does require, unlike condemnation, where you really don't have an opportunity as the affected property owner to challenge anything but the public purpose for the taking, this statute recognizes this is a very unique and specialized situation. And you have to take into account the other interests. Judge Anderson, in the concurring opinion that he wrote to the Kennedy case, talked about that. And he said that the legislature empowered the town board to choose a route that is in the best interests of the public. The town board is required to weigh competing interests. And that is not what was done here by this town board.
I had one question. Is it your position that the easement, that under the easement your client granted, that Mr. Feltman could put a paved road on that route?
On that route?
Yes.
There's no conditions or there are no limitations in that easement. It's granted to him. And so presumably, if he wished to do that, he could do that.
I assume he would have to pay for that himself, to build the road and pave the road on that the easement property you've given him.
That's what the Cartway statute provides. Of course, in addition to the damages that have to be paid, if that were established as a Cartway. But of course, it's an easement.
No, I'm not talking about a Cartway. I'm just talking about the easement. So under this easement that your clients gave to him, he could right now build the road at his cost, you know, pave it, you know, use it so that it could be used for any kind of cars. Is that your position?
Yes, it is. And which brings me to another important point, and that is that the town board was focused on its engineering report, its own engineer's report, which put a figure of over $100,000 to upgrade the trail to township road standards. Now, the town board didn't even impose a requirement on Mr. Feldman to build the township road standards. There's no such requirement. And as the countervailing engineering report said, there are many driveways in the area that are comparable in terms of slope, in terms of width, which the trail right now is about 12 feet wide. And the engineering report from Idlewood Engineers said, you could upgrade that for $28,000 and have a driveway that would be comparable to other driveways that are in the area.
Mr. Van Cleve,
and improvement
wise. Yes. My understanding, though, is that once the road, the easement from Valhalla, if that were made into a road over to the Ideal 5.9 property, that there is a real potential for there to be wetlands on the Ideal property to get to the buildable, before you get to the buildable portion of the property, which, as I understand it, is on the west side of the property. Do you think that's a consideration that the township board could take into consideration?
Again, that is on Mr. Feldman's property. I would point out that the engineering report from the Idlewood engineers researched the DNR wetland maps and said there are no wetlands delineated on this trail route.
Well, I just had a wetlands case, and I know that not all wetlands are delineated.
Well,
so the fact that the wetlands aren't delineated on that property by the DNR doesn't mean that there aren't wetlands.
And what we know is that for a number of years, that trail has been used, and it was actually improved by this property owner, Mr. Feldman. So,
and of course, if it's for snowmobiles, it doesn't really matter if it's wet or not, because it's frozen.
Well, that doesn't mean it's not used in the summertime too. And there was you've still got a trail that is used. I would commend the pictures of it. It's a well-used trail that are in the record on this. And I think that it gets off the mark as to what the charge here is of the town board, and then in turn, what the judicial review charge is, if we are concerning ourselves with what will it take for Mr. Feldman to upgrade that driveway over his own property with an easement that he has, indisputably, he has a right to use.
And so, thank you, Mr. Cleve.
Thank you.
Your time is
up. I urge affirmance.
Thank you. Mr. Witte, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will do my best to address some of the points raised by Mr. Van Cleve. First of all, the focus on the easement, and I believe even on the Romer case, is perhaps misplaced from the town standpoint. And the reason is, had the Romer case, had the easement in the Romer case presented access issues, challenges to getting from A to B, B being the landlocked property holder's usable portion of their parcel, the court would have had to deal with those. And it wasn't part of the analysis that's at least articulated in the Court of Appeals, to the extent I recall. But here we do have an easement And in that way, the two cases have a point of analogy, but the critical difference is that here we have a meaningful access issue or problem, and in Romer, they apparently did not. And the meaningful access determination, which was made by the town board, is the determinative factor in this case, I believe, Your Honor, to I guess, try to respond in addition to further to your inquiry about Romer. Legal access does
so
not.
Why isn't the so? If Mr. Van Cleef said that Mr. Feldman can, you know, build a road on the easement, so why isn't that meaningful access, Mr. Witte?
Fair question, Your Honor, and I think that that is the question that arises in any meaningful access case. In Kennedy, we had a steep bluff, and to address one of Mr. Cleve's points, I'll do it at the same time. It's they had access to a portion of the Kennedy property from a public road, but it was the portion that was not usable. Mr. Van Cleef is talking about you can get to the corner of Ideal 5.9's property. That is correct, but the usable portion is on the opposite end of the property. Your Honor,
so is the road, if he builds a road, is it going to sink in the wetlands? Is that the problem? And that's why it's not meaningful access? Because, you know, you can't build a road. You know, the bridge on the River Kwai was on two nights ago, and, you know, they had to move the bridge because the pilings wouldn't hold. I mean, is that why the road is not going to work?
It appears, based on the town board's findings, that that was one of the concerns. That is, construction of this road would be impracticable. It would not be effective access. It has wetlands that underlay what would be the roadbed. It has a steep hill that we can see a video from the Idlewood client submission that they struggled to get up in a dry summer day with a four-wheel drive off-road vehicle. So it is, Your Honor, you raised the exact point is how steep is too steep, in how challenging is too challenging to render it from meaningful access to no long or not meaningful access. And here the town board decided, after walking the property, listening to their engineers talk about the issues that exist, the low-lying wetlands, both engineer reports, even Ideal Woods report, talks about low-lying wetland issues that would need further analysis and are probably treatment. And again, that's what brings us out of Romer and into this case, which is the access granted by the easement, even if valid, meaningful access or access as we talk about it under 164.08. Here the town decided it didn't.
The town decided it didn't, but the district court decided that it did.
The district court decided that it did. And that lends itself to my next point, Your Honor. I believe that the district court overstepped its review boundaries when it did so. It talked about what it thought was the appropriate cost considerations. It talked about what it thought was the appropriate width or road style type of considerations. That's the role of the town board, Your Honor, the elected officials that have to make this challenging determination under the Cartway statute. And the district court talked about facts not even in the record, such as, well, maybe the Ideal 5.9's owners, bar patrons, would start using this access. You know, the district court judge put himself in a town board chair and started thinking about considerations that would be appropriate for someone in that position to determine meaningful access and public policy. And the public interest, Your Honor, my last 10 seconds here, was served. They did consider safety vehicle access, the public travel. These roads, as town roads, have to be available for safe public travel. And those interests were addressed in the engineering report and the town board's determination. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Witte. Thank you very much, Mr. Van Korf. Thank you very much, Mr. Van Cleef. It was nice to see you again. The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within 90 days.